I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer, Jimmy Israel, with us from Cleveland, but in Washington, D.C., I have Dave Zirin, sports editor at the progressive magazine The Nation, Paul Butler, law professor at Georgetown University, and what do you know, NPR editor Ahmad Omar sticking around. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thank you, Michelle. Hey, fellas.
What's up?
Welcome
Jimmy.
To the shop. How are we doing?
Hey.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know what? Ahmad, you know, we can't go much further without mentioning that the Detroit Tigers lost to the Boston Red Sox last night in Game 5 of the playoffs. You mad, bro? You doing okay?
You're starting just like that, huh?
just like that, bro. This is the barbershop. That's how we get down.
Yeah, no, me and sports are not having a good relationship right now. I saw Michigan lose to Penn State about 7 times on Saturday in one game. And now this, I think I might take up knitting or something. I hear it's good for the circulation. That's where I kind of – although I'm still kind of sucked in because the Tigers, they got Max Scherzer, who's probably going to win the Cy Young this year, and Justin Verlander, who won it last year for the last two games. So they got a shot, knitting.
And starting pitching makes geniuses of every manager. That's, I think, the story of these playoffs. I mean, you look at John Farrell, manager of the Red Sox. Last year, he's a bum managing Toronto. This year, he's on Boston. He's got good starting pitching. All of a sudden, he's a genius. Don Mattingly looked like he was going to be fired halfway through the year. People are criticizing him in this Cardinals series. Now he's got Zach Greinke just won. He's got Clayton Kershaw coming up. And so all of a sudden, he's going to look a lot smarter, too. It's all about the pitching, fellas.
Dave Zirin, while you've got the mic, it seems like the whole summer steroid debacle is old news now. Has baseball made a comeback, in your opinion?
No, baseball hasn't made a comeback. Mm-hmm. Baseball will need a time machine to make a comeback. That's part of the problem. but I do think that the steroid issue is always going to be cyclical. If the next scandal takes place, that's going to be the topic here in barbershops all across the country. Alex Rodriguez is going to be in quote-unquote trial for his baseball life in the weeks ahead. We'll be talking about it then. It's one of those things that flares up, it goes down. It flares up, it goes down. It's like a terrible disease you don't want to mention.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, is there a good disease you do want to mention?
No, that's a good
one. All right. Hike, let's kick it over to the football field. Paul Butler, PB, Prince Paul.
What's up?
Most of the buzz about Washington's team this season is about whether the name needs to be retired. Even President Obama recently weighed in, but many people weren't happy when NBC sports commentator Bob Costas gave his two cents during halftime last Sunday. Drop that clip.
Think for a moment about the term Redskins. Ask yourself what the equivalent would be if directed toward African Americans, Hispanics, Asians, or members of any other ethnic group. When considered that way, Redskins can't possibly honor a heritage or a noble character trait, nor can it possibly be considered a neutral term. It's an insult, a slur, no matter how benign the present-day intent.
Oh, thank you for that. You know what? Dave Zirin, my whole thing is, look, now, Bob Costas, that's my dude. He's a professional commentator, so he can say what he wants anytime he wants, but this hasn't been his cause, and he looks like a bandwagon hopper. He looks like he's doing what the kids are calling nowadays concern trolling. You know, he's just mentioning something so that people will come over to his fire and hear what he has to say about it. This has not been his topic of discussion, not really been his cause, but if it was his cause, he'd be a powerful voice. You know, you wrote a piece applauding his comments. Tell us why.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, it's not like Bob Costas took the mic and opined on Syria or the government shutdown. I mean, the Washington football team was playing at that moment, and this has been a story of the season. I mean, when you have some of the most famous writers in America, sports writers, Peter King, Christine Brennan, who's a former beat writer for the Washington football team, all of a sudden saying they're not going to say the name anymore, when you have the United Nation coming out, when you have conservative politicians like Tom Cole from Oklahoma, one of two Native American congresspeople, when you have Charles Krauthammer, for goodness sakes, saying that the name should change, then this is an issue that speaks to what's happening in the NFL right now, and it's also a much broader issue, and I think Bob Costas has more than earned the right to opine.
Do you care about Jimmy's point about the jumping on the bandwagon a little late?
I think that's a beautiful thing. I think
really?
that shows that the movement is working. That's how you know a movement is working, when people say, hey, this train is moving, I better jump on board.
Interesting.
You know,
Paul,
what? I liked it the first time it happened, when it happened in Cleveland with the Cleveland Indians, who are still not for nothing the Cleveland Indians. Paul Butler.
I mean, even just to say the name, you make a political statement. What if they call D.C.'s hockey team, the Capitals, the Washington White Boys? And every weekend, the sports anchor would be, how the White Boys do today? The White Boys are going to kick some butt tonight. everyone would see that as really strange. Just because we're used to thinking of Native Americans as mascots, that doesn't make it right.
You know, it is interesting when people do draw the analogy to what would give offense. They generally don't draw analogies that involve white people or groups that are traditionally considered white, Europeans. You know what I mean? They generally use other minority groups, and I'm curious about why that is.
Well, even Costas said, what if it were blacks or Asians or Latinos? He didn't say whites. Again, we just think of those other people as the other.
That's exactly right, Paul, and that's because I think perspectives on race and racism in this country, it always privileges the white perspective, except when Native Americans talk about this. Like, there was a team in the Dakotas, and in protest of Native American mascotting, they named their club team the Fightin' Whiteys, and they were threatened with being kicked out of their league for calling themselves the Fightin' Whiteys, and that just tells you something about how sensitive Caucasians
people do, in defense of the Redskins name, bring up the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. That's kind of their their one thing they bring up and say, hey, this is not offensive.
Mm-hmm. The thing about
that's interesting.
What about that, Dave?
Oh,
sure. I mean, the thing about the Fighting Irish, though, is that you have decades of an Irish-American power structure at Notre Dame. One would think that if it was offensive, they would have said something. There's no record whatsoever of any sort of Native American power structure in the Washington football team.
I have never heard anybody else object to the name of the Fighting Irish, but I've never heard anybody object to the name Fighting Irish. Maybe
people raise it rhetorically in the debate.
But it does
all the time.
Seem, and I note that the owner of the Washington team said that there are Native Americans who do agree, who don't find it offensive. But I question that. I mean, I find that when you have people who are willing to, as the Oneida Indian Nation has done, put some resources behind making their case to the public. And what also strikes me is just how viciously people attack them for advancing their argument. Mm-hmm. I mean, what they have done is they've gone to games, they've stood in protest, they've said, I'd like you to listen to my perspective on this. They've never engaged in violence. They've never, thrown blood on anybody or done anything of that. You see my point? They've merely asked people to listen to their point of view. And for that, people have gotten viciously attacked them. And I just find that, I don't know. I don't know what that says. But clearly this is going to, continue, right? So
We're
listening. We're having our weekly barbershop roundtable. We're joined by writer Jimmy Israel, sports editor Dave Zirin, law professor Paul Butler, Tell Me More editor Ahmad Omar. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Michelle. Racism as nostalgia. Welcome to America, everyone. All right. So, Saturday Night Live, they're still on, really? They recently announced new cast members. And again, for the sixth season in a row, they don't have any black female comedians, Michelle.
Well, not only that, but the six new cast members are all Caucasian or European American or or white, or if you want to say. I mean, there just isn't a lot of diversity in this cast now. And Kenan Thompson, one of the two current black cast members, both males, said in an interview it's because the show can't, quote, find ones that are ready. Now, I think this is really interesting, though, that Jay Farrow, his colleague, did say that he felt that the show needed to pay more attention to diversity, but somehow his comments aren't getting this kind of attention. I do want to, since Jimmy alluded to the fact that perhaps everyone is not watching this program anymore, I will just give you a short clip of Thompson in the SNL skit, The Old Barbershop.
You remember Dale Dawkins' hair?
I swear to Lord.
That boy had a fro so high, a bird could fly into it and come out 2 weeks later with another bird and a dozen eggs.
Best eggs you ever eaten in your life.
Oh, Lord. Wow. Thank you, Michelle. You know, in the past, Kenan has played black women on the show. This year, he says, no more drag. God bless you, brother. But about black comedians, you know, I think he made a point worth making. And don't tase me, bro. But a lot of black humor isn't topical and brokers in the absurdity of our own shared experience. Also, black comedians aren't necessarily self-deprecating or willing always to make fun of other black women. Not really since Kim Wayans and Live in Color have we seen black women do characters on other black women. Of course, Maya Rudolph, not for nothing, she did her share of takes on, I believe, Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey,
Beyonce.
Another character, Beyonce on SNL. So that's not a hard and fast rule. But I also think sketch comedy is its own, it's its own set of skills that not everybody has. So there might not be a lot of black comedians who are ready. PB, Paul Butler. What do you think?
Well, first of all, Kenan Thompson is not funny, so he has a lot of nerve talking about black women not being funny. You know, he's just a peon anyway, so we ought to be more insulted by the fact that with this huge cast, SNL can't find one black woman who was worthy. It's just as ridiculous as other organizations that say, we'd like to have more qualified minorities, but there's just none out there. That's always a big, fat lie. So, Jimmy, how would you even know what black women comedians are doing? Because they're just not getting the media space to do their thing.
And can I just point out, too?
I get out the house, bro. But it's like this also. So do you disagree that sketch comedy is its own really specific skill set that not every comedian will have?
Well,
But I think there are a whole lot of black women out there. I'm sorry.
Oh, Go ahead, Dave.
No, just a couple points. First of all, people should look up who Issa Rae is, Issa Rae. She did the Awkward Black Girl series on YouTube. And that, to me, says something in and of itself, that she had to go to YouTube to get her HBO deal because the opportunities just are not there. So she went a different direction altogether. The second point I would make is that Kenan Thompson and Jay Farrow are two interesting people in that they come from very different experiences. Jay Farrow comes from, like, the real stand-up tradition. So he actually knows African-American women who are funny because he was on that same circuit. Kenan Thompson comes from the Nickelodeon trajectory, child star, Hollywood, the whole thing, to Saturday Night Live. So I think Kenan Thompson has a very blinkered experience as far as who's funny and who's not.
Right. When I first heard these comments, it kind of sounded like Kenan was stuck between kind of a rock and a hard place. Someone's basically asking you if your boss who made you famous is a racist. You know, I can see how he could be like, no, it's just, you know, not ready yet. But I do think that it kind of smacks of not being completely honest. Before I came here, I was in Chicago, and Chicago kind of prides itself for sending people to Saturday Night Live. And a lot of these folks go through the Second City comedy group over there. In fact, last year, there were three new cast members on SNL, and they all came through Second City in Chicago. And if you've ever been to Second City, it's up in Old Town, which is on the north side. It's a very white neighborhood in a very segregated town, which is far, far away from some of the really happening black comedy scenes in Chicago, which are generally happening on the South Side, Bronzeville, places like that. And the other thing is, for Second City these days, since it's so famous, you actually have to pay them for the honor of joining their training courses and then hopefully eventually get promoted onto the main stage. So a lot of black comedians are doing a lot of great things in places like Chicago, but they're not doing it through Second City. And the SNL folks, if you can't find any talented black women, I suggest maybe hop on the bus or the Red Line, go down to Bronzeville, or even come out here to D.C. There are a lot of black women who are doing amazing things in comedy right here, so I don't buy it.
That's interesting. I didn't know you had to, like, pay them to work.
It's the new hustle.
The new hustle.
Just by way of interest, if those are interested, in the 38 years that SNL has been on the air, the series has had only four black female cast members: Yvonne Hudson, Denitra Vance, Ellen Cleghorn, and Maya Rudolph, who is biracial, also is the daughter of the famous Minnie Riperton. I mean, I do note that I think it's also a question of who's in the writer's room and who's writing for these people,
definitely,
too, because I find that a lot of times their sketches are not about an inside-out perspective on what people of color think of themselves, about what other people think of people of color. And I think that's not a very appealing place for people to be. I mean, I do note that when Maya Rudolph went back to host the show, that her opening monologue was about how she'd slept with everybody on the staff, including all of the interns.
Wow.
So I have to ask, you know, who wrote that?
Right.
Did she write that?
And also, only one Asian woman has ever hosted the show, Lucy Liu. One Asian man, Jackie Chan. So we're not exactly talking about a flourishing multiculturalism at Saturday
Night Live. All right, I'm going to ask you this, Dave, since you just happen to have the mic. Why do we care? Because I can imagine where some people are listening to this conversation and saying, you know what, I have more important things to worry about than who's on a comedy show, so what?
Oh, I think we care because our culture reflects our society. And so it sends messages about who gets in and who gets out and who actually gets to express what's happening in our world.
And we care because diversity works. It makes organizations better. To wit, Saturday Night Live is not funny anymore.
Okay.
Maybe if they got black women, they'd be funny.
Okay. Well, other people. Latina women, too. I want to hear some of them. And Asian women, too. Other people, too.
Funnier people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I don't remember the last time I, like, sat down and had to watch Saturday Night Live. I think it was during the Al Gore lockbox deal. Mm. And, you know, it's just not must-watch television anymore. They might as well try to switch things up.
I think they show it in Guantanamo now. As an instrument to make
people
talk.
No, I do watch it. I do watch it because I do think that I think you would have missed something if you didn't see Tina Fey's impression of Sarah Palin and some of the work that they do during campaign years, I think, is very interesting.
Exactly. You catch that on YouTube for the 10 minutes.
Jay Farrow dropping the mic as Obama after one of the Romney debates. That was pretty classic.
Okay, actually. Well, one more casting controversy. The hugely popular romance novel 50 Shades of Grey. They're all acting like they have no idea what I'm talking about. Like, it's being made into a movie. The actor, Charlie Hunnam, who was set to play the leading role of Christian Grey, bailed on the film. So, Paul Butler, I understand you have a few ideas about who should play the role, and I appreciate you stepping up because all of my other brothers out here are acting like, I have no idea what you're talking about. 50 Shades of Grey, what that?
What kind of barbershop
is this? You know? So, Christian Grey should be played by Kanye West. He's charismatic and broody, and I would imagine a little freaky in bed.
Okay.
You know, yeah. If it has to be an actor, I say Idris Elba. I just like to see a brother in the role. We can be action heroes or slaves trying to escape. How about more romantic leads?
Wow. Is that romance? Is that romance what that's about? I'm just wondering. Okay, Jimmy, you have any thoughts about this?
Well,
You're our film guy.
Yeah, well, I want one of my Brown brothers to be Christian Grey. I'm thinking about Danny Trejo as Christian Grey because nobody does sadism like Machete.
What about Louis C.K.? I mean, just go a completely different direction.
I know nothing about this book. I will full disclosure, but I know there's some sort of freakiness involved. And if you guys want a brown person, I think I got to go with Dennis Rodman. He's got some of the freaky
good
involved.
Gracious.
And then you get the coveted North Korea market, you know.
It's gold.
Did you weigh in on this?
Or
just trying to pretend you're not here?
Louis C.K. would be nice. And also, just a shout out to Charlie Hunnam, who plays Jax Teller on Sons of Anarchy, one of my favorite shows. I can't imagine Jax Teller playing Christian Grey or Grey Christian or whatever this guy's name is. But I don't know. How about Woody Allen?
Okay.
We'll do Jewish Grey.
I'll put it on the record. I've never read one of these books, and I do not intend to. And I will say this. I'll quote a friend of mine who's a pastor. I don't think we'll be marching over this one.
Mm.
All right. Jimmy Israel's a writer and adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College with us from NPR member station WCPN in Cleveland. Dave Zirin is sports editor for The Nation and host of SiriusXM Radio's Edge of Sports Radio. Ahmad Omar is our editor here at Tell Me More. Paul Butler is a law professor at Georgetown University. They were all here in our Washington, D.C. studios, except for Jimmy. Thank you all so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yep.
And remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our Barbershop podcast. That's in the iTunes store or at NPR.org. That's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Tune in for more talk on Monday.